Lila Hayes' Natural History and Horse Podcast with Finn and Lila Hayes. In this episode, Lila will discuss horses and pugs. We'll all discuss the theories and hypotheses regarding bird evolution, the evolution of feathers, and the relationship of archosaurs, pterosaurs, and dinosaurs. This is Finn and Lila Hayes' Horse and Natural History Podcast. So, Lila, why don't you, sorry for the pause, why don't you start talking about what you're going to say? So, I'll leave it to her.
So, hi everybody. So, today I'm going to talk about pugs and horses. Stay right there, and I'll...
Lila will now be entertaining you with information from Horse and Pony Breeds by Carolyn Ball. This will mostly relate to the Shetland pony, though some other breeds may also be included, and a more general overview may be coming in a future episode. I'll leave it to Lila.
So, Shetland pony is my second favorite breed. My first favorite breed is the Palomino, which we'll be talking about later in the episode, or perhaps in another.
There was a recording error. It turns out the Palomino is in fact a color variation on any horse breed, but is mostly found in Mustangs. I'll give it back to Lila now. Thank you for letting us fully ensure that the content delivered is appropriate and
correct.
So.
I'm going to give you some information about the Shetland. For nearly 2,000 years, the Shetland Isles were the only home for the smallest of Britain's native breeds. But in the 19th century, it was exported and bred in great numbers to serve as a pit pony on the mainland. The origin of the Shetland pony is the Shetland and The origin of the Shetland pony is the Shetland and Orkney Islands. United Kingdom. The Shetland has a small head with sloping shoulders, a deep, thick-set body, a short back, short legs with some feathering and small open feet. The Shetland's character is courageous and independent.
Feathering, she means short little hairs. The Shetland pony is courageous and headstrong in character.
Its principal uses are riding, driving, and pet.
We are very sorry for the interruption of our cockatiels, but not a whole lot of control over that. She basically said their three uses are riding, driving, and for pets.
Its features are hardy and strong, and it can pull loads twice its own weight. That's impressive! Next, we're going to talk about the Palomino. As I said before, the Palomino is not a breed, but a color conformation.
Variation on any breed. Sorry.
Only in the USA it is recognized as a breed. Elsewhere, it is registered as a type. The early emperors of China are reputed to have ridden these golden horses, but today's palominos are developed from horses arriving with Spanish settlers, which then bred with mild mustangs. Its origin is California in the USA. Its color is gold with light mane and tail, white markings on, and white markings on legs. Its height is usually over 14 hands. It is usually an intelligent and good general purpose horse. Its principal uses are riding, trekking, ranch work, and rodeos.
I'll discuss pugs, of which we have one, a particularly adorable specimen called Paisley, which we rescued from the local animal shelter. Lila will now comment on this subject.
First thing I'd like to say about Paisley, in general, is that she's very, very naughty. And she can do a couple of naughty things. I'm not going to list them for time reasons.
For example, only today, she tore apart a basket that was used to hold her treats at a hook at a dog walking station Lila had set up. She then proceeded to dismantle the basket. Luckily, the treats were not in it at that time, but she sure thought they were. A similar incident had occurred previous, when she took apart a stack of newspapers and other important documents to get at the treat box. Lila will now talk further on this issue.
Yeah, so, It was being used to hold newspapers, but she didn't know that, so she tore it apart. Which is sad, because it was my basket.
Did you make it?
No, I did not. I don't know where it came from, but it was in my closet, so I decided to use it.
Okay. Thank you for that enlightening commentary on this incident. Please inform us of what topic you would like to entertain us on next. We will now discuss the taxonomic characteristics and bloodline of pug dogs. Pug dogs first arose in the courts of the early Chinese emperors. One emperor is said to have had more than 16 pug dogs. Then, the pug was bred with a mastiff to create the bulldog, inheriting the mastiff's massive size and the pug's short, slightly flattened face. The best way to describe a pug is if if a small Boston Terrier ran in at great speed to a shovel. Basically, its head is really flattened with all these wrinkles.
Yes, and the difference between a Boston Terrier's ears and a pug dog's ears is that the pug dog's ears droop and the Boston Terrier's stick up.
Yeah. The comparison I made is only a loose one, and is taken from a book whose name I cannot remember, but it is fitting nonetheless. The pug dog's tail is well renowned for its curliness, or curlibidia. Point is, it's curly, and often bends back, because it is. Our dad had a bulldog
named Biscuit,
whose hijinks we are often recorded in the family archives, in which we may do an episode on in the very near future. So, he had experience with this type of pug, with this type of dog. So, a pug was a very clear choice, particularly as Lila had been petitioning for a dog for quite some time.
Yes.
And a pug seemed a very family-friendly option.
Yes, and I had been petitioning for this dog, any dog, but particularly a pug, for what I think is about a year. I may be incorrect.
I recall about 3 months was when it was strongest. I think it was like December through February. But she was the one doing the petitioning.
Yeah. He did not want a dog in the house at first.
I thought that if we are going to get a dog, that would be very nice, but she is going to care for this dog. Just saying.
And so, no, I am caring for most of the things the dog needs.
Yeah, so all is well in the world, but I take care of the cockatiels.
Yes, so. And they are not my cockatiels. I had no part in getting them.
And we got those last August, and we record this as of, Tuesday, April 17th at 5:22 p.m.
Yes, and they are still not tame. We can
2018. Yeah, we're working on that over the summer. So, what topic would you like to discuss next, Lila? Okay, change of plans. Lila will talk about nothing. She will return in the next episode and may provide a commentary on what I am saying if she has some background on the topic, which she may or may not. So, my topic is the evolution of birds and their relationship to other things. Namely, dinosaurs, archosaurs, crocodiles, pterosaurs, stuff like that. So, let's start with what is the relationship of the archosaurs to everything else? So, basically, I have in front of me, and Lila can see it, although you, of course, cannot, whoever you listener are, and I have a big sheet of paper filled with charts, and to her they probably look like gobbledygook, but to me they are pretty special. So, basically, there is a class called Reptilia, or Ancient Reptilia. It's actually not technically a class, or whatever, but basically, Reptilia branched off into lizards and snakes. It then evolved into plesiosaurs and ichthyosaurs. Then we get into the archosaurs. Now, the chart I consulted to make this had another derived form coming off from archosaurs, first on the timeline, but it was not labeled. I'm going to infer here that it was crocodiles. So, Sukians, basically. Then, pterosaurs. So, the thing with pterosaurs are, they are more closely related to dinosaurs and birds than to anything else. So, their closest living relatives are that house sparrow in your backyard right now. If not a house sparrow, whatever bird is currently common in your local area. Where we live, it's house sparrows and cardinals and blue jays. We live in the southeast. For someone in California, it might be very, very different. That's just an example. And then, birds and dinosaurs split off. So you have the dinosaur line, which continued to evolve, and birds continue to evolve. And I have another chart right here, and I'm going to explain the old family tree. It has recently been shaken by a new study that I will leave it to you to conclude whether it is accurate or not. But, basically, in the old family tree, I recommend you draw this, by the way. Basically, just draw a V, with one side longer than the other. Then on the left side of the V, or the right side, it doesn't really matter, draw another branch, so that you have a V within a V, or something like that. So, these, basically, on the right you have Ceratopsians, and that's like Triceratops, Chasmosaurus, that kind of stuff, and Hadrosaurs. So these are, and Stegosaurs, Stegosaurus, Parasaurolophus, all that stuff. So these are the highly evolving plant eaters that would grow and become chewing batteries by the end of the Mesozoic, Cretaceous, asteroid impact, or maybe not. And then, on the V I asked you to draw, one branch is labeled Sauropoda, and that's the sauropods. The other branch is labeled Theropoda, and that's the theropods. And they grow into birds, carnivores, and the ancestors of feathers. Or, like, they're all the groups with feathers. So basically, the idea is, somewhere along the theropod line, feathers evolved. But not from a common ancestor where Sauropoda and Theropoda branched off. And definitely not from a common ancestor when Saurischians and Ornithischians branched off. Because that's what the two groups are called. The one with the two Vs is Saurischians. And the one on the right is the Ornithischians. Now, the new theory would have us believe that you have your V, and you have it split off, but instead, sauropods split off at the very beginning, and they continued evolving in their own direction, but and they get their own separate side of the V. But on the other side of the V, there's the second V. And one side is theropods, and the other side is ornithischians. And those are basically the three major groups. Sauropods, theropods, and ornithischians. So, refresher, ornithischians are most things that eat plants. Theropods are carnivores, birds, predominantly carnivores. There are, of course, exceptions. Check out Therizinosaurus, which is dead awesome. The danger floof. And they evolved into birds. This theory also proposes, possibly, the evidence on this is a little scanty in terms of the scientific paper trail, but I believe there is evidence in assorted sources for a feathered ancestor where sauropods and what would grow into theropods and ornithischians branched off. And that would mean that the default condition of every dinosaur is feathers. Meaning, as long as they don't evolve no feathers, they will have feathers. Which is kind of a big deal. I was browsing the internet the other day, and I saw a video that said, minor taxonomy change, has dinosaur nerds in uprising. Seriously, guys? This thing is not minor! We could be talking about a Brachiosaurus with feathers all over it. Okay, probably not for various reasons we're not going to talk about here. But still! Maybe we are going to talk about them just a little bit. The major one is, the bigger you are, the less you need feathers. Because if you're that big, one, feathers can't help you in a physical advantage. And the other, feathers can't help you keep warm. The big problem right now is to lose heat because you're so big, because of a body mass equation that some great big biologist dreamed up sometime. You really need to know the name of that. And so, yeah. So that sort of matters. So you need to understand that to understand the relationship of birds. And bear in mind, this is all branching off from a family tree. It started with a branch off of lizards and snakes. Just saying. So. And concluded with my cockatiels right here in the cage next to me. Hello! 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 looking distinctly alarmed. That's my sister whistling, by the way, not them. Iowa. So, that's my sister in the background. So, yeah. So, yeah. So, hold up. Wait a second. Just need to pause this for... If you hear a background noise, it's my sister trying to get under my bed and achieve a cleaning operation. Which I'm more than happy to let her do. Because, yeah. Gosh, do I need it.
His bed... Under his bed is, like...
She just found 3 Smarties. 3?
No, 2.
2? Okay. Yeah. 2. 2 Smarties. Whatever. Back to the point. So, now we're going to explore the evolution of birds from the point we talked about. So, you have Maniraptora. And that's... Now, bear in mind, this was written before what I call the dinosaur revolution. Well, the new dinosaur revolution. So, before the new theory. So, this may be slightly out of date. This is taken from a book called The Variety of Life by Colin Tudge. What an awesome name, by the way. Colin Tudge. Let us all consider the awesomeness of that name for just a split second. Okay, back to the main podcast. So, Maniraptora branched off into the Dromaeosaurids, and that's Deinonychus, Velociraptor, which were no way as big as they made Jurassic Park made them seem, Dakota Raptor, Utah Raptor, all that stuff. The sickle claws, basically. And then the other branch is Aves, or Aves? Gosh, I hate Latin. No, that's not true, I love it, but it can be a real pain. Which then branched off into Archaeopteryx and its kin, and Metornithes. And from Metornithes, we get everything that is modern birds. From Maniraptora, we get everything that is feathered dinosaurs, according to this chart. And from Aves, we get everything that is modern birds and some extinct ones as well. Whatever. I just thought I'd put that in perspective. So, from Metornithes, we get the Alvarezsauridae, which is Mononychus, Mononychids, stuff like that. They're the ones with the weird little, like, hooked claw thing. Basically, they just have one finger. It's really weird. By the way, we're left to assume that all of these had feathers because that's the ancient condition, blah, blah, blah. Then... the other side of that branch went into Ornithorhynchus. And by the way, all of these that I'm talking about have died out, unless I specifically mention otherwise. Then we get into Ornithorhynchus, which in turn splits into something called Iberomysornis. It looks... Okay, they totally stole the patterning from that thing from a European cuckoo. Just saying... Just saying. Except it looks kind of more like a sharp-shinned hawk to us Americaners. Americaners? Americans? Americans. There we go. And then that split off into something that split off into Enantiornithes, which is Enantiornis and kin. And then something that split off into something that split off into Patagopteryx. And Ornithurae. And from Ornithurae, we get what can be considered modern birds. Hesperornithiformes. Hesperornis regalis and kin. And company. And then that also splits into Carinatae, which splits into Ichthyorniformes. And finally, the first group of non-extinct birds we've had so far. Stop it, Lala. Neornithes. And I find this utterly hilarious. The example this book gives for Neornithes is the brown pelican. I just think that is so awesome. So yeah, and then Neornithes includes, if you've ever looked at a field guide, it's from oldest evolved birds to newest evolved birds. And that's basically what we're looking at here. So, Neornithes splits into Paleognathae and Neognathae. Neognathae goes into 22A, other Neognathae. And that's pretty much what we can call modern birds. The Paleognathae splits into Ratites and Tinamous. Which are, by the way, Tinamous rock. So, yeah, Tinamous rock. And Ratites are rheas, cassowaries, ostriches, and kiwis. Not the fruit. That'd be really weird. Imagine this fruit with a beak and legs and feathers coming at you. Making a weird piping noise. Yeah, kiwis are weird. I do not lie. And then the other side, Diognathae, splits into something that splits into Galliformes and Anseriformes, and that is pheasants and ducks. And then the other branch of that splits into other Neognathae. And oh my gosh, this is one stinking huge family tree. So, Neognathae. Oh, gosh. Just a second, sorry. I will now resume. My throat is, like, just killing me. You're killing me, Smalls! Oh, gosh. I've only heard that saying, like, twice, so... someone is gonna murder me for that. You're killing me, unknown person! So, Neognathae splits into a group that runs off the page... whatever that's supposed to mean. And, the other group, which does not run off the page. And so, they divide it into 7 series. So, the first series is grebes and divers. So, all the stuff you see at the front of your field guide. As well as penguins. Penguins!
Waddle, waddle, waddle.
Yeah, that too. And then series 2 is pelicans, the cover for this, and wandering albatross. So, albatrosses, tube noses, all the seagoing birds, except seagulls, which shouldn't be called that. Which brings me to my next point, which is series 3, which splits into cranes, gulls, not seagulls, because most of them never seen the ocean in their lives, especially these days, and herons, bitterns, and then pigeons, columbiformes, which is just a great name, columbiformes. And then series 4, which is just storks, like literally just storks. Then, we have, Styticiformes, which is parrots. And then we have, here we go again. and then we have series 5, which is Falconiformes, birds of prey, and Strigiformes, barn owls. Now, research has recently come out that falcons are more related to woodpeckers, or like, evolutionarily, they should be grouped more closely with woodpeckers than with other birds of prey. So, this may be a little misleading in that regard. And then you have Cuculiformes, which is cuckoos, which were aforementioned, looking a heck of a lot like that ancient prehistoric bird. And then, series 6, Caprimulgiformes, also a great name. Caprimulgiformes. Chit-chit. And that's nightjars and stuff. And Apodiformes, which is swifts. But not swallows. Is it swallows? Okay, maybe it's swallows. For all I know, it is swallows. And then, Trogoniformes. You're probably noticing a pattern here, which is... Krogans. Theory 7, Caracciae formes, common kingfisher. Well, sorry, just kingfisher, but that's the example they gave, which is actually a pretty reasonable example. Oh, I belie my words. And then Picciformes, great spotted woodpecker, which should really be more closely related to falcons. And then, this one I love, Passeriformes. That's the perching birds. What do you think they decided to use as the example for that? An emperor bird of paradise. Now, first of all, that's like maybe one of the least known Passeriformes groups. And secondly, their name means without feet in the perching birds. Yes, okay, the scientists at that time were not as enlightened as we are today. But still, you picked that example? Oh, come on. That will end. Wait, will it end? Sorry, just a second. I need to check something. No, I don't. So, that will end our talks today. Lila discussed pugs
and horses,
and I discussed the evolution of birds and just stuff like that. So,
stay tuned for more videos. I mean, podcasts.
Yeah. So, stay tuned.